Week 9 has come and gone, but the NFL is not the same. The Raiders now rule. The Colts go into Lambeau and come out winners. Doug Peterson gambles and loses in New York. And as a special bonus, Andy and I are going to give you our mid-season MVP top fives, all that and so much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hi, it's Gary Gramling from the 10 Things podcast, and I want to tell you about our friends at Mack Weldon, because Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. They will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. All of their products are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. And Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they will still refund your money. No questions asked. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well too. Whether you're working out, going to the office, going out on a date, just everyday life. So go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using the promo code MMQB.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I'm here with Andy Benoit. We are through all the baseball nonsense. We're done with that. Everyone is on to football. It is week 9. Andy, this was a nice compact week, nice neat week, interesting storylines emerging, and should we just jump right into it?
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's start with the Sunday Nighter.
Number one.
Oakland Raiders topping the Denver Broncos in convincing fashion. Now, is this the beginning of the Raiders' reign in the AFC West?
One victory, and now we're crowning them and rolling with it, and they're the team to beat in the AFC West. And maybe they are. Maybe they are a very complete football team. And I know last week, Gary, this podcast kind of became about me saying Derek Carr isn't a top quarterback, and
that's why I'm not adding anything to this. I just wanted to see what you would say this week after this game.
Well, I'm not backing down from that, and I'm not regretting that. I think Carr has a lot of room to improve, and I think he will improve that. I think Derek Carr, he's as good as everybody else thinks. He just hasn't played that well. And my sense is at some point he's going to play as well as his talent suggests he should play, because they do have a dominant offensive line. They do have an extremely diverse system, and all these things were on display Sunday night against Denver. They'll come out and they're one of the few teams that can come out and run a six-man offensive line and not have to change their offense, run game or pass game. They can continue on as they normally function because they do so many things with their protections. They're just a very well put together offense. And the thing we haven't talked about, Gary, is the defense has gotten better each week. And I think what really changed was a few weeks ago when they signed Perry Riley. Perry Riley is not a difference maker in and of himself, but he was the plug in the gap of the defense. They did not have an answer at inside linebacker, and it was a problem, especially against the pass. And they're still looking for answers there. Malcolm Smith, Corey James, it looks like Smith has finally beat him out, but those guys have rotated a bit mid-season, which is always an indication that you're looking for answers. But they got solid in the middle of the defense, at least. They're not bad there anymore. And now those guys in the back end and the front end, which it's talented secondary guys, talented pass rushers, they're all playing well. Everybody's playing better now that the linebacker situation got stabilized.
Yeah, and I think Collinsworth said it on the broadcast. Pretty nice break that Perry Riley popped up on the waiver wire there. You know, he's not a typical street free agent type of guy. Not that he's a superstar, but he has made them much better in the middle of that defense. Because when I think back to this team, I remember when they beat Baltimore back in, I think it was week 3, maybe week 4.
Yep.
Terrence West looked like Jim Brown against this defense. And, you know, it was a much, much different story tonight. I just want to ask you two things about the Broncos here, because I think there were two glaring things that stood out about this team. One, they seem to really lean on Trevor Siemian tonight, which I don't know if they're trying to sort of condition him to take on a bigger role as the year goes on and maybe have to run one of those late game drives. And the other thing is, this Broncos run defense been pretty shaky all year, and obviously tonight they got pushed around up front.
They did. Let's do the run defense real quick, because the Simeon one's a slightly longer discussion. I like their run defense, and I'm always surprised when I hear their stats and where they rank, because when you put on the film, they do not look like a 20. I think they came in ranked 24th. They're probably going to be lower after this week. Yep. They do not at all look like that on film. I think Jared Crick is very good. I think Derek Wolfe's one of the five best run-defending interior defensive ends in the league, so 3-4 type defensive end. I think Sylvester Williams, outstanding, and they've got linebackers who can run behind them. So I don't have an answer for why their numbers aren't better. I do know that I don't believe they've given up a 100-yard rusher until this game tonight against Oakland in the past year or so. So it's not a vulnerable run defense. It's just not a statistically prolific one for whatever reason. One of it could be, and maybe we have a Jeff Irwin look into this, they play so much man coverage there in Denver, and they do green dog blitzes, which means if you're in man coverage and the guy you're guarding stays in to block, you become a blitzer. When you do that, you are vulnerable to quarterback back scrambles a little bit. So maybe their run defense numbers at times have been inflated. I'm just guessing. I don't think it's a bad run defense, though. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Simeon thing's interesting, Kerry, because something Gary Kubiak has done all season long, and it shows up in my film notes every week, is when it's a pressure situation, like early in the games. I'll take the week one, for example, and this is held true every single week. In week one, they came out, they're playing the Panthers, it's on national TV, who is this Trevor Siemian guy? A lot of hype from the front of the season, there's a lot of butterflies, and what did Kubiak do? He had Siemian drop back on deep seven-step dropbacks and throw it the first several plays of the game. He tries to get his quarterback comfortable by just throwing him into the deep end of the pool. That's how Kubiak's done it. And if you notice, anytime Siemian throws an interception, there's a fumble or something bad happens, and the momentum, the quote-unquote momentum, is not on Denver's side, Kubiak's going to have Siemian drop back. It's probably going to be a deep drop back with no play action. It's the hardest thing you can ask a QB to do, and Kubiak's thinking is, it's first down, it's a predictable defense, this is our best chance to get our QB comfortable, let's just throw him in the fire and try to get this thing back on track. And it looked tonight like they leaned on him a lot because it wasn't working, so they kept being behind in the situation. They went three and out their first five possessions. Yep. So if you're going to try to throw the ball when things aren't going well, you're going to throw a lot in a game like this.
Well, they came out throwing. I mean, they threw their first three downs. Two downs on the next series.
They get him comfortable that way. That's how they play. It's a running offense, but they want to throw on running situations, especially early in the drive. That's been their MO all season long.
All right. I think they're asking a lot of their pseudo rookie quarterback here. I mean,
you could argue that
seventh rounder.
Right, and the thing to remember, always have to remember, if guys like you and me have sat here and noticed this stuff, Gary, then you can bet the Jack Del Rios and the Ken Norton Juniors of the world, they've noticed it too. And they're telling their players, and defensive players have noticed it. So the throwing on first down, they might want to get back to more of a traditional approach, or at least change the throws. It's not just that they throw with Siemian on first down, it's that they ask for tough throws, relatively speaking. They ask him to move the ball down the field early in the down. We didn't see a lot of Andy Janovich in this game, and I think that's where you need to be if you're Denver. A guy you can throw to in the flat most times. I saw him playing with a cast on his hand a few weeks ago, so maybe he's not able to catch right now. But in theory, you can throw to your fullback in the flat, and their running game's at its best when they have a fullback on the field. So that's what they need to be playing like.
All right. Well, before we move on from this game, and I just want to say, great atmosphere in Oakland tonight. It was kind of a shame that the whole Las Vegas move is hanging over this team right now. Crowd was great tonight, great atmosphere. You know, we haven't seen the Raiders play many high-profile games in recent years, and crowd was into it, team was into it. Really nice night for Oakland. But before we move on, Andy, I want you to step into the spin room with me, and I just want to clarify for everyone, because I've been saying this on your behalf, and I want to hear it from you. When you say Carr has been the 20th best quarterback in football this year, that's hyperbole.
Oh, yeah, that was yeah, a lot of people say, well, who are your quarterbacks 1 through 19?
Yes.
And I don't have quarterbacks 1 through 19. I don't know who. I'm not ranking them. It was hyperbole. I would say there are clearly a dozen guys who have played better than Carr has played this season. That doesn't mean they're better quarterbacks. It means they're playing better. But that was, yeah, it's a general type of thing. I was so caught off guard when you told me that he's getting MVP discussion, because that never, I don't read this stuff, Gary. Even though I'm a part of it, I watch film all day. I don't listen to a lot of other football stuff. So I had no idea people viewed Carr in that kind of light, because I have not viewed him in that light all season long. I think he can get there at some point, and this will be a very dangerous team when they do.
All right. Fair enough. I'm just glad you said it. I mean, the election is coming up, and I've been telling people to write in Grambling Benoit 2016.
Yeah.
See if it works.
Yeah.
You got to be on message here. I hear we're very big in Australia. I was told that on Twitter. Simon Wojnarowski, one of our audience members out in Australia. So maybe we'll run for office down there, and then we'll work our way up to the U.S., down the line.
Yeah, because you want to get some real experience actually politicking before you try to do what we do here in the U.S. with all that stuff.
There you go. All right.
Number two.
We are going to go to East Rutherford, New Jersey, where Doug Peterson was a gambler today. He was at Jack Del Rio. It was like he was down in Atlantic City. Fourth down aggressiveness twice in the second quarter. They did it a couple times down the stretch as well. Didn't really work out that well. I don't know. Andy, what did you think of what I didn't like about the one that they did? This was down. They had a chip shot field goal near the end of the second half. They went for the first down to obviously try and get a touchdown drive out of it. And they handed off to Darren Sproles on a fourth and one. And it didn't really, banging him between the tackles didn't seem like a great idea. But that was my only real criticism of it. In a vacuum, look, it's his call. If he has a play he thinks it's going to work, call it. See what happens.
Yeah. I wasn't thrilled watching the game and the flow of the game. I was surprised every time he went for it on fourth. I wasn't thrilled with the decision, but it's not something I would say decided the game, although you could argue it had a very big influence on the game. You could
argue.
A couple
more points would have helped.
There's always so many factors, though, and if let's say they do get their field goals, then the score is different, then everybody's managing the game differently, Right,
exactly.
The butterfly effect. We're not going to get into that. But the one I did have a problem with, and the Steelers did the same thing against the Chargers on Monday Night Football last year, it was a fourth down and two play, and they ran a quarterback sweep to the boundary. And by that, I mean if the ball was on the left hash mark, it may have been it was on one of the hash marks, and they ran the sweep to the same side of the field.
The short
side, it's a shorter field. And that's one thing. But the other is when you go quarterback sweep, and it's to the boundary, there's the less space also impacts what you can do with your receivers. And there's no receiving threat in a quarterback sweep. It's a run play. And if there's no receiving threat and it's fourth down, then the guys on that side of the field, the DBs and linebackers, pin their ears back and race after the quarterback. You need to do something to make them plant their heels and freeze a little bit. That's why a rollout with a pass element is the best design. Even if you're telling Wentz to run it, you need to have a pass look on that.
Yeah.
You can't just run your QB sweep to the boundary. That does not work. And the Steelers did it with Vic and paid a dear price last year. And then I thought that fourth and two play, frankly, was not a good design or a call. And I don't say that often about coaches, and I think Peterson's done a great job with this offense, but I did not like that play at all.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball there, Eli Manning had a nice day. They took advantage of some early turnovers, and the Giants get a nice division win here, and the Giants are suddenly right in that playoff conversation, which we didn't expect them to be in, maybe after they were getting trounced in Minnesota, but look how the world turns. Vikings are down. Giants are up. What do you think of this Giants team?
I think their defense is getting better. I don't think it's a great defense, but it's no longer a vulnerable defense. And Steve Spagnuolo has spent the season, their coordinator there, trying to figure out who goes where and what do I have. They have a lot of new pieces there. And they're not flawless pieces. Some of the guys have certain things that need to be hidden in their games and other elements of their games that need to be accentuated. And the best example, and there's been a few, but the best illustration of what they're doing is in Landon Collins. Because he is, as we've talked, Gary, he's a liability in man coverage, so which is tough because that safety, strong safety, is usually the man who guards tight ends. So he can't guard tight ends. He's not great at that. He's not a coverage guy, but he's not a pure linebacker either. So what have they done? They've used him more on blitzes and on rotating coverages as part of blitzes. They're letting him become a downhill player. They're going into attack mode, and they're finding out that Landon Collins is a very good attack mode player. There's been a lot of examples like that. That defense is getting better because they're playing to their players' strengths and hiding their weaknesses more effectively.
Number three.
Now let's go on to topic three, and this was one of the surprises of the day to me. The Colts go into Lambeau and beat the Packers. Not necessarily shocking that the Packers lose games in Lambeau now, because we've seen that in the last 2 years, but this was a banged-up Colts secondary. This was a Packers offense that seemed like it was getting on track a little bit last week in Atlanta, even though they lost that game. And, you know, Indy was sort of on point today. I thought this was as good as the Colts have looked all season. And just when you thought it might slip away, because this was a defense that let one go against Brock Osweiler a couple of weeks back, they, you know, they held on. And Luck got the ball back, and he converted two big third downs. Colts get a big win, stay in that AFC South race.
And some of those third downs by Luck were otherworldly third downs. The 20-yard play to Doyle, where Clinton Dix got a blitz off of the edge, that was as good as quarterbacking. I mean, that's what separates quarterbacks. And Green Bay's defense went back to blitzing in this game, and they got Quentin Rollins back. So my guess is that's two things have happened. Because Dom Capers will not blitz if he doesn't trust his cornerbacks. And I think the Colts had every reason going into this game to think he's not going to trust his corners. They're still playing backups. Gunter's in there. Rollins hasn't been in there. They're without Randall. Shields is on IR, I believe. So the Colts probably didn't think that would be the first thing Green Bay did, and it was. Green Bay brought edge blitzes, DB blitzes off of both sides. They'd blitz the slot, and they'd blitz a safety off the other side, and they did a lot of variations of that, and it's because I think they got Rollins back, and the other thing is Gunter has played better. That's item number two. So they're better in their secondary, but Indy adjusted to that extremely well. Gary, I don't see the offense quite the same way as you do off of last week. I thought watching that film, and I don't know how much of it carries over into this or not, but my guess, just knowing Green Bay's patterns, as I always say, they're a team you have to see on film because so much of it happens off schedule, and it's all about what their receivers are doing, and their receivers play in vacuums. They're isolation routes a lot of the time. Watching them on film last week, they were very good with route combinations early in the game against Atlanta's zones. Indianapolis is also a zone defense, different type of zones, but it's a zone defense. And then in the second half, Atlanta played all-man coverage, and Green Bay disappeared again. And I felt like watching the TV game today that there were too many instances again where the man coverage was winning against these Packer wide receivers.
I would have thought that this Colts secondary, specifically this Colts secondary, and I had, you know, I do the fantasy football thing during the week, and people ask me about the Packers all the time, and I thought this might have been the Packers' last hurrah, because I thought this was a secondary that you could take advantage of. I thought this was one where their receivers could beat the Colts coverage guys one-on-one, and it just didn't happen. I also thought Monte Davis might miss this game because of the concussion stuff, but... but even
they're,
with Davis,
they're a different secondary with Davis in there. He's not a shutdown guy, but he's a true number one corner. And I'm surprised he doesn't move around a little more than he does, but he's capable of that. Rashawn Melvin played on the perimeter. He started, and he was their number two guy, essentially. They had Patrick Robinson in the slot. Melvin played very well. He had a stretch like that a few years ago for Baltimore where he was good. Now, he got exposed in that season as well. He has some limitations. But I think as a physical defender, when he can get his hands on you, he has the right frame for that. And then the other thing they did, they had Darius Butler at safety in this game because Mike Adams was out injured, their leader in that secondary. And I thought Butler did a very good job from what you could see on the flashes on screen. Again, you never know until you see the overhead, but they didn't get beat deep very much in this game either.
Boy, you just, you know, we talk about it so often, and we don't have to jump into it again, but God, you just wonder if this Packers offense is ever going to get it right again.
It's strange because they'll do concepts that beat the coverage, like man. We hear all the time about man beaters, and they'll do some of that. They'll change their formations. They'll switch the releases off the line of scrimmage, meaning the receivers crisscross in a certain way. And it doesn't have to be aggressive. It just be a subtle change of lanes. You change lanes like you're drifting into the next lane. All that stuff distorts coverage rules, but they don't do it consistently enough. And I don't understand that because it's not like a skill you need to have to do it. You're calling plays, so you don't need to get in a great rhythm to do it. Just call the plays that do that and put those plays at the front of your charts. I don't get that. Maybe there's something I'm missing. Mike McCarthy has more Super Bowl rings than I'll ever have. But it's week in and week out, that's the case with this team. And I, for the life of me, can't understand it. And I haven't had a single football mind be able to explain it to me either, why they play that way.
It'll just be, you know what? It'll just be permanently part of our show. We'll talk about it.
It's good. It's good for us. People, those Wisconsin fans, they're a nice, loyal bunch, but they can get very surly too with their team during the week. They give us a good, you get good attention by bashing the Packers.
Yeah, there you go. And we're all about getting attention on ourselves. Well, really nice win for the Colts today out in Lambeau. They are back in that AFC South race.
Number four.
The Jets go down to Miami. Nice win for the Dolphins here. This was not necessarily a beautiful game. Kenyon Drake with the kickoff return touchdown to win it late in that game. I don't know, did you see how this one ended at all, Andy?
No, I didn't. Take me through it real quick.
It was the, so I had, because I do the six games at once, I had an eye on this game. And, you know, you just sort of get into the rhythm like, okay, there's the kickoff. Jakeem Grant, the rookie for the Dolphins, runs it out to like the 20. It was kind of a wacky run around, you know, break 20 tackles. But, you know, brought down to the 25, and it's like, okay, that's done with. There was a flag behind the play. It was an offsides. Anthony Allen ran out in front of the kickoff. So 5-yard penalty, offsides. They make him go back and kick it. There was this long, ridiculous delay. There were a couple injuries on the play. And I didn't even realize they were kicking off again until I looked down at the screen towards the end of this run where Kenyon Drake took it back 96 yards on the redone kickoff. And that ended up being the difference in the game. That was with about 5 minutes to go. And then the Dolphins just wore it down. More Jay Ajayi goes for 111 today, a mere 111. And he, I don't know, something must have been terribly wrong with him today if he only went for 111 yards.
111 against the Jets is quite impressive, part A. Part B, and when you're a zone running team, which Miami is, and Ajayi fits that pretty well because it gets him rolling downhill, and he's also more nimble than you would guess. To rush for 100 yards plus against the Jets as a zone running team is a couple of feathers in the cap. Most teams that, like Baltimore a few weeks ago, they're a zone running team. Most teams don't try to run zone against the Jets because defensive line is too athletic. I wouldn't be surprised if when I put on this film, if I find this performance more impressive than his one against Buffalo a few weeks ago or the other 200-yard game that he had against, what was it, Pittsburgh. I guess he had 200 yards on Pittsburgh.
Yep, Pittsburgh and then on Buffalo. And the Dolphins' leading receiver today was Dominique Jones, whose three catches was what he had on the season and what he had in his career coming into the year. I had no idea who Dominique Jones was. I had not seen him on the field this year. He went to Shepherd College. That's all I know about him. And he's like 30 years old. So he's not even a rookie. That was very bizarre. But the storyline out of this game that we will discuss, Ryan Fitzpatrick, two more picks. He was banged up a lot. He lost his helmet on a play. He had a knee injury. It looked like he was going to come out, but then he was back in the game. Bryce Petty came in, threw two passes, and that was it. But the question now is Fitzpatrick just a lost cause? It looks like the season is slipping away. Do they go to Bryce Petty at this point?
I don't think you can do that quite yet. Abstract, and yes, is Fitzpatrick a guy worth starting? Probably not. But if he gives you the best chance to win still, you can't quite mail it in yet, or, you know, can't play for next year, so to speak. 3-6 or two games back of third place, they're obviously not going to win the division against New England, so it becomes a wild card discussion. 3-6, I would keep playing at 3-6.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't feel Petty's ready. And Chan Gailey has said that kind of privately to broadcasters and let them be the mouthpiece. They would have, if they felt Petty was even close to ready, I believe they would have put him on the field by now.
Well, that's the thing, and I'm of the mind that you can do more damage to a young quarterback by throwing him out too early. I'm not one of those guys who's, you got to see what he is. You got to put him in a game and see what he is. You should know what he is from your practices, and if he can't handle this, you run the risk of ruining the guy by running him out in game situations.
You do, and the rest of your team, too. Keep in mind, Todd Bowles has to motivate this team in the offseason. He's going to be there next year. If the team knows you're not playing the best quarterback, it becomes much harder to have a cohesive team. It becomes harder to build your organization the following season. It's not good. Players want to win and have success too, and they want the best guy on the field to do that, especially at the quarterback position.
Yeah, we kind of lit this conversation and have the same one about Keenum versus Goff out in L.A. But, it was different with Geno Smith with the Jets. I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's been in that system for 2 years, and he's in a free agent year, and he's not necessarily part of the future. So it was kind of like, well, let's throw him out there. Let's see if Geno Smith can be our stopgap next year in case we need that stopgap for Petty and Hackenberg. But to me, you can't play Petty right now unless you feel 100% comfortable with it, and they obviously do not. Hang on 1 second, Andy, before we move on. We've all taken jobs to earn extra cash. Back in the day, I umped my share of Little League games. I spread mayo at a sandwich shop or two. But I've got a better way that you can earn extra money on the side, especially in this holiday season when you gotta, you gotta get some nice stuff for the kids, keep them happy. Uber is the ultimate side hustle. Driving with Uber is a new way you can earn extra cash whenever you want. It's not just another job. It's a totally flexible way to earn. You can turn it on and turn it off just like your car. If you have a few spare hours here and there, drive with Uber. You are your own boss, and every day is a payday when you drive with Uber because you can cash out anytime with Instant Pay. With access to Instant Pay, cash out your earnings up to 5 times a day with no minimum amount required. So listen, if you enjoy earning extra cash, if there's something special you'd like to buy, your car can start making you money. So go ahead, get your side hustle on. Sign up to drive with Uber today. Go to uber.com/drive now. That's uber.com/drive now. uber.com/drive now.
Number 5.
Out in San Diego, Chargers win again. Everyone sort of forgot about them in the AFC West. Melvin Gordon, a monster day. Melvin Gordon is turning into a premier back. I thought he was a complete bust about a month ago, but he is having he is really getting yards in some games with some tough sledding. He had 196 today, scored the go-ahead TD. This is some pretty good things happening in San Diego as far as the Chargers go and as far as them sort of hanging around the playoff hunt goes.
Well, the silver lining with all these injuries at wide receiver in San Diego is that they were forced to play a style of football that really fits their running back better, Melvin Gordon. They've gone to more base personnel, more two-back formations with him. Gap scheme runs naturally come out of that inside zone where it's just running behind double teams up inside. And Gordon has responded very well. And in fact, I thought last week against Denver was his most impressive NFL performance. It wasn't his most statistically prolific, but he had, I think, 111 yards against what I've already told you I think is a very good Denver run defense, not an easy one to play against. Mm-hmm. And they were physical, hard-fought yards. They were earned yards. So to come out the next week and rush for 196 after that, there's a lot to be excited about or a lot of hope around Melvin Gordon, and rightfully so. He's looking like he's fitting into what they're doing. And he's a guy we've talked about. He's going to need the right system and players around him because he has a specific type of skill set. He's not a big-time creator on his own. He covers a lot of ground when he changes direction. So it's going to be hard for him to create his own yards. But if he can get the scheme to help him and get his downhill momentum rolling, he can make his own yards that way.
Yeah, we're seeing a little more Derek Watt, the fullback, out there in San Diego. But, yeah, it's, you know, when Danny Woodhead went down, Gordon was forced into this full-time role, and he has really he's really done a nice job with it. Like I said, I thought all the fumble problems and just watching him try to bounce everything outside and
yep.
I just didn't think he was a player. And, you know, over the past month, I think you'd have to completely reassess that and rethink that at this point. He's having a great year.
Number six.
Let's move on to topic six. Another guy having a great year all year, except for maybe that one game in Chicago. Matthew Stafford pulls off some pretty phenomenal late-game heroics to pull out the win in Minnesota. This one was a little bit ugly. The Vikings are still trying to figure out what in God's name they're going to do without an offensive line. But Stafford ends up moving the ball in the final 23 seconds. They throw it 35 yards. They get an 8-yard throw, and then they get a 27-yard throw in the middle of the field to Andre Roberts. They get up there, spike the ball. Matt Prater hits a 58-yarder, forces overtime, and then the game ends with Golden Tate, who has certainly had his ups and downs this year, catches the ball on the sideline, somehow stays in bounds between Harrison Smith and Xavier Rhodes, the two best DBs in Minnesota, spins it back, does some stupid dive into the end zone that was probably completely unnecessary and risked a fumble, but he held on to it anyway, so it was all good for the Lions. I don't know. All of a sudden, this team is right there in the conversation for the NFC North as everyone is having troubles, but Matthew Stafford just keeps on sort of putting this team on his back when he has to and pulling out wins.
And it's what's more impressive just for Stafford is that it's not a highly schemed offense. It's a well-designed offense, but they don't try to beat you through their play design. They want to out-execute you. So you don't see a lot. And that there's some exceptions. The way they use Tate, that is, they are going to try to beat you with the play design because he's really their gadget player. But for everybody else, it's a pretty straightforward offense, and they're counting on Stafford to manage the game effectively and take his shots at the right times. And I don't think it's a good receiving core, Gary, quite frankly. And he's making these plays late in games with guys. As I said, mm-hmm. I think Tate's a gadget player. Bolden cannot run anymore. He looks like a backup tight end out there at times. And Marvin Jones struggles with press coverage, and it's really hard to call him a true number one because of that. And so that's who they play with. And Eric Ebron, who's had a much better year than he has before, but I still want to see more with him. I want to see him continue. I need to see five or six more good games from Eric Ebron before I'm ready to say that, hey, that's your tight end for sure. That's their receiving core. That's what they have, and they've had injuries at running back, and their offensive lines has had very high and very low performances. The one constant, the consistent stabilizing force all along, has been Matthew Stafford, and I don't think anybody who's watched him over the years thought we would classify him as that kind of a quarterback.
As a stabilizing force, yes, that's not often been the case in the past. The Vikings, they had the same problems they've been having on the offense side of the ball. It was a little bit better today. Pat Shurmur did some more quick strike stuff. They got a little bit creative with some misdirection, end-arounds, reverses. They actually scored the winning touchdown. It was a tight end-around to Rhett Ellison. But in the end, not enough for the Vikings, who just cannot catch a break right now.
And they're going to have to get comfortable with that quick strike game. And my guess, and this is totally a guess, I don't know if it's true, but my guess is that had something to do with Norv Turner deciding to leave, because Norv Turner's offense is not conducive to that. He can do it, but that's not what that offense is. And Pat Shurmur has done that before, but it doesn't matter who's right and wrong here because they don't have offensive linemen. They can't block, so you have to have the quick strike game in this case.
Yep. Sam Bradford still took a couple of vicious hits today, so... You know, they have some time to figure things out. Not a whole lot of time, but between now and the end of the season, the Vikings are still right there in the NFC North race. But yeah, a little bit of a panic button being pressed out in Minnesota.
Number seven.
Let's go into topic seven. Ben Roethlisberger, once again, a nightmare day in Baltimore. He was coming off an injury this time, so maybe that had a little something to do with it, but this was just an atrocious day for the Steelers offense. They were not really in the game until some garbage time scores late. They were down 21-0, ended up turning it into 21-14. And my question for you, Andy, is do you know the last Steelers quarterback to win a game in Baltimore?
Give me a hint.
Oh, come on. There's only so many.
Well, I know, but I
he's not, okay. My hint: he's not on the roster now.
It must be something extraordinary because you wouldn't ask it. I mean, my guess would be Roethlisberger. Has he not won a game in Baltimore in a while?
It's not Roethlisberger. Charlie Batch is the last Steelers quarterback to win a game in Baltimore. Roethlisberger's numbers in Baltimore are insane. 69.3 career rating in Baltimore, 8-12 touchdown to interception, and he was bad again today. Yeah, they bracket Antonio Brown. They have Jimmy Smith, and they have safety help over the top, which seems like it would be such – they do it so well. It seems like it would be such an easy answer across the league as far as containing Antonio Brown, but the Ravens just – they do it better than anyone, I guess.
What the Ravens have done this season – for one, Pittsburgh has way too much talent to be putting up performances like this, regardless of how the team they're facing plays. That's one. But to look on the bright side with Baltimore, what they've done this year is they have very specific game plans from week to week. And that's – it's fun watching their film because about a quarter and a half of the way through, you go, okay, this is what they did this week. They don't do a lot of different things within a game, but from week to week, they'll do a lot of different things. And so for one game, there was a game where they had a lot of double A-gap blitzes, almost every single down. I think it was the Buffalo game where LeSean McCoy was having trouble blocking. It was in week one. And so they went after him. Double A-gap blitzes, and that was the theme of that game. There's been another where it was cover two was the theme of the game. They played cover two all game long, forced turnovers out of it. I've seen ones where it was cover three was the theme of the game. Same thing, zone coverage, but one safety instead of two safeties. And they play these coverages very well. They do a lot of things very, very well. They're a solid team, and they're well coached. And so when they get a game plan, and if the game plan is going to work, they're going to out-execute you because that's just the approach they've taken. It's a such they're a focused defense in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. The stats through three quarters, the Steelers had 69 total yards of offense. They had 89 penalty yards. So that was about how that game went. And, you know, you'll see the 21-14, and Roethlisberger ends up throwing for 264. It was all garbage time, though. And that's, again, you know, some people were saying, oh, well, he's coming off the knee, coming off the meniscus. This always happens when they go to Baltimore. It happened last year in December when they lost to the Ryan Mallett Ravens team and Roethlisberger had one of his worst games of the year. It just always happens when they go to Baltimore. That's the way it goes.
And Baltimore's been – there's some continuity there, too. They've changed offensive coordinators a lot, but Roethlisberger does not play against the offensive coordinator. It's John Harbaugh, and right now it's Dean Pease as the D coordinator. There's some continuity there, too. So keep in mind, you play against coaches as much as you play against players in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll sort of stay on that topic as we go to topic eight.
Number eight.
The reader reaction mailbag type topic of the show. We'll come up with a name for it. But we're actually going to start with DJ Hooper at HoopDreams29 asks, what can the Ravens do to fix their offensive woes? They can't run very well, and they have poor QB play. I actually think the Ravens are, and you could give a better answer on this, Andy, but I think the Ravens are getting better offensively. I think a lot of it has been the injury problems they've had. The entire left side of the line was missing for a little bit this year, but they seem to have settled in with Terrence West and that zone, sort of that outside zone stuff in the running game, and they're starting to get some of their receivers back. Perriman is settling in. Steve Smith Sr. returned to the lineup today. I think they're going to be all right.
My thinking all along has been they'll be all right just because look at how many of their players missed a lot of time last year or the year before, their skill position players, and it reasons that those guys will get better as the season progresses. They'll get more comfortable. Now, having said that, when you put on the film, yes, the offensive line injuries have been a bit of an issue, and I don't think they run the ball consistently enough. I do think they get away from it at times, like the Jets game a few weeks ago. Yep. That was a windy day. I know it's the Jets. I know it's a good run defense, but that was a windy day. You were without Steve Smith, and you just fired Mark Trestman, presumably because he got away from the run game a few weeks before. and they didn't run the ball in that one. And there's been some inconsistency in that regard. And then Flacco's been up and down as well. And it's not just because of the guys around him. His execution, his drop-back mechanics, his decision-making, the stuff where he could be the stabilizer like Matthew Stafford's been, he has not been that guy this year. He's not having a good season by his standards. I'd say there's 20 better quarterbacks in the world than Joe Flacco right now, right? Do we get more listeners that way?
No, stop it. Stop saying things like that.
he's been up and down. He has not played up to his standards.
Yeah.
So for them to get back on track, the good news is it's all fixable. These guys, if you tell Baltimore, hey, your problem is you need Joe Flacco to start playing better and playing to his level, I think they'd tell you, we'll take that. We'll bet on our quarterback in that regard. But it's still got to go out and happen at some point. And maybe today was a good first step.
Yeah. And look, Ravens are first place in the AFC North right now. Steelers
just
have
lost
like that. Yeah. So, yeah. That's going to be a fun finish there with the Steelers, Ravens, and Bengals all right there. Next question coming from Dana Wright. Oh, who let Dana into the show here? At Dane28D. With the Vikings' downward spiral, internal issues, Packers' porous D, and Bears being, you know, do you consider the Lions the NFC North favorites? Andy, why don't you take that one first?
I don't. I think that receiving corps is going to be a problem at some point in the season. I think it's going to catch up to them. I think the Vikings' offensive line is going to be a problem, and I think Green Bay, we know what their issues are. I think Green Bay is the favorite, though, because Aaron Rodgers, for as bad as that passing game functions at times, that's a heck of a guy to have to offset some of those issues, and we see that. He's using his legs more the last few weeks. I bet on Green Bay in that division. Also, that defense, I think, is going to be extremely hard to play against when everyone's healthy late in the season, if everyone's healthy late in the season.
Yeah, I still put the Vikings and Packers. I'll call that a 50-50 proposition between those two teams. I think the Lions are still a step behind. But look, Stafford's playing as well as any quarterback in that division, and you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think the Vikings took a step toward getting their house right, or as right as it will be today. And you just have to think the Packers, between the defense and Aaron Rodgers, you end up piling up some more wins. Next question about the Vikings coming from Scott Brink at OnTheBrink87. What the hell was Zimmer doing calling a timeout with 26 seconds left in that game? It was four down territory, win or go home. I get what Scott is saying here, and basically, why didn't Zimmer run that clock down to the end? You know, that left enough time for Stafford to lead that last drive, get the 58-yard field goal, and that's how it ended. The only thing I'll say, and yes, obviously in retrospect, you would have liked to have taken more time off the clock. Specifically, two more seconds off the clock would have helped. But, you know, if you get a pass interference in the end zone and the downs reset, you're going to be maybe hoping that you had a little more time left. So I'm not going to go, yeah, he should have taken more time off the clock, but it wasn't the most egregious clock management mistake that that we'll see. And look, the answer is don't give up the 27-yard pass on the last play from scrimmage of the game. That's how you end up winning that game.
Yeah, that helps. But the two issues, the clock management's not as easy as it looks in the heat of the battle. But the two issues that you see most with coaches, and you saw it a little bit today in some games, is not calling your timeouts on the front side of the 2-minute warning when you have to call timeouts. If you're in a must call timeout situation, then call your timeout right then and there. Don't save it for morale reasons and, hey, we still got the timeout, we'll do it on third down instead of second down. Do it ASAP, because for one, you never know if the other team's going to fumble or something, and you're going to want more clock for your offense when you get the ball back. But 2-minute warning timeouts and working around that, and then using your challenges as timeouts too. I think coaches need to, too often they protect the challenges, worrying about overturning penalties or overturning officials' calls is what it would be. Almost never. I had my researchers look up, led by Jeff Irwin. I think it's less than 1% of the time do teams actually win two challenges and then get a third and win the third. You don't challenge twice in games.
Yep.
So I think
you can't use your challenges
as a timeout. It's a longer timeout anyway, so you get more rest for your guys.
Yep. No, that's the only thing that Madden players do better than actual NFL coaches is clock management for the most part. But yeah,
well, they can pause the game too. Keeping that in mind, you can pause and then figure, okay, what am I doing here?
Zimmer, I didn't. Yes, it was a mistake. It wasn't the biggest mistake I've ever seen, though, in clock management. And we'll go one more question here. Chris Sacco at CJ_Sacco. Midseason report, best, worst, most improved surprises. Sorry, that was midseason rookie report. Andy, is there anyone who has stood out to you in the rookie class that you want to highlight here?
We know Ezekiel Elliott. We know about him. And I say the name because I think he's been pretty much close to as good as his numbers indicate. Carl Joseph has been another stabilizer in that defense for Oakland. That was the other thing. They got the inside linebackers figured out, and then Carl Joseph took over in week 3 and has been a good run support guy, a solid coverage guy. And that other first-round rookie safety, Gary, in Atlanta, Keanu Neal, he's been very good at times. I think he's one that can wind up matching up to tight ends on a long-term basis. I think he's going to be a very versatile, good, solid, even a dynamic player for them in a lot of ways.
I love Keanu Neal. I was a charter member of the bandwagon. I'll just throw out Joey Bosa, considering he missed so much time
Bosa.
This
You're
summer.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I thought Bosa was going to be really good. I didn't think he'd be this good this quickly, considering how much time he missed this summer. And then the other guy I have liked is Laremy Tunsil, playing inside. Did not see that coming. I didn't think he'd be that good at guard, but he has been very good this year.
Gary, I like your picks a lot more than mine. I think Tunzel's been extraordinary. I think the talent is – you watch him, you just go, who is that guy? Because he looks like he's playing on a springboard or something. He just moves so bouncy and natural. And Joey Bosa, I don't want to say a lot about him because I'm going to write something on him soon. I think Joey Bosa is off the charts, though, as a talent. And the talent's producing as well. I'm with you on that.
Yep. Yeah. Let's hit the polls real quick before we move on. This was we had last week's post-show poll was, should regular season games be able to end in a tie? 59% of you said no, play until you have a winner. 41% said ties are fine. I have no problem with regular season ties. I actually would have no problem if they got rid of regular season overtime. If it's a tie, it's a tie.
I like how I think they've got it perfect now. The overtime rules, if it's that close after 5 quarters, safety becomes an issue. Keep in mind also, if teams were that close, why not let that be reflected in the standings? The idea is to reflect what happened in the game. Sometimes the game's too close to call. So I get it. I'm fine with it.
And we actually had a rookie-related question for the pre-show poll today. Who is the best long-term prospect among the top 4 picks in the 2016 draft? 55% of you are big fantasy football players and said Ezekiel Elliott. 23% Carson Wentz, 17% Joey Bosa, 5% Jared Goff. Andy, if you had an expansion team and could only have one of those guys, who would you take?
If it's a guy I'm taking, the quarterback, I'm taking Wentz. If it's like within like how good is Wentz at QB versus how good is Bosa at defensive line, like who does their respective job better? I think Bosa's playing defensive end better than Wentz is playing quarterback right now, and I would take Bosa. But give me Carson Wentz. I'll take him over almost anyone young in the NFL.
Yeah. And a T-shirt winner. We have a T-shirt winner. This was with the correct prediction that Derek Carr and the Raiders would lead off today's show. The winner is at @Marino_SDFan. I am going to guess he is a huge fan of the comedic actor Ken Marino from Wet Hot American Summer. I will reach out to you on Twitter and let you know how to get that T-shirt. You're going to have to send me some info, but we'll get it figured out. Congratulations. And if you want to win one of these MMQB T-shirts, Homage makes them, and they're beautiful, and they cost like $30, but they're legit $30 T-shirts. They're fantastic. Go to iTunes, leave us a review, 5-star review. In your review, predict what is going to be the number one topic on the upcoming show. If you get it correct, you can win a T-shirt. If it's ever a tie one of these weeks, we'll give it to whoever has like the more specifically correct prediction. But
all right,
we'll
do
cross
they have
that
to do 5 stars to be eligible? Are we really
I
manipulating
think so.
Like
I,
that?
I well, that's a good tiebreaker too.
All right,
how could you not give us 5 stars?
Yeah, well, we have this lightning round coming up, so let's just hold off on that confidence here. Gary loves the lightning round.
Number nine.
Topic nine, the lightning-ish round.
Let's, no, lightning. We're not doing lightning-ish. Lightning. We're going to do this lightning style. You've been good lately.
We had the Browns. After you wrote those nice things about the Browns last week, they look terrible today. The offense looked all right. The defense was completely overwhelmed. The worst part of this game, the Browns had like four neutral zone like lined up in the neutral zone, which if that happens once, maybe twice, you say, all right, you learn your lesson. Line up on sides. That's a good way to start. They had at least three of them. They had another one that was called back because they had back-to-back at one point. And one of them was declined, not called back, because the Cowboys ended up converting the first down anyway. But this game was just a complete beatdown. I don't know if you have anything to add on that one, Andy.
Well, the one thing to add is I usually just skip over pre-snap penalties when I'm watching film because I just think that's part of the game. It happens. Unless a guy gets like 12 of them, I'm not going to bother with it. But I did rewind one this year. I forget the game. It was earlier, but it was a Browns game. And the reason I rewound it was because it was something I'd never seen before. And it was Jamar Taylor in press coverage just flat out false starting and going and jamming the receiver when everybody else was standing still. He jumped the snap count or something. I'd never seen it. Jamar Taylor, he's had that kind of year too. He's had a lot of good moments, but his bad moments have bordered on comical.
Yeah. Well, some bad moments. Chiefs, Jaguars. Jaguars, oh, man, they had this one. And Chris Ivory looked like he got in, looked like he reached across the goal line. They said they ruled it a fumble on the field. Chiefs recovered in the end zone. This ends up being a 19-14 win for KC, and that was a huge play in that game because if that is ruled a touchdown, that's 7 points for the Jaguars. But
quietly, the Chiefs are 6-2.
6-2, and they basically ran out of players today. They were without Alex Smith, without Spencer Ware and Jamal Charles, and Jeremy Maclin ended up re-aggravating that, I believe, groin injury in this game. And Travis Kelce had a pretty spectacular ejection. And this will be, if you're into Kelce as like the Gronk Jr. personality type of thing, I guess this might be endearing to you. This was also frustrating to other people. He picked up two unsportsmanlike penalties for arguing with the officials on the same play, ended up backing them up 30 yards out of field goal range. They ended up moving back into field goal range on the next play, but Kelce got tossed on it. After he got the initial flag, he turned around and took out his military appreciation camouflage towel and threw it at the official as if it was also a penalty flag. So
He said he felt bad afterwards. Like he knows what he did was stupid. He's had a nice year, but boy, To win and, with him out and to win with Maclin out and Ware and your quarterback. The Chiefs are 5-2 and their backups are 1-0. That's how this is.
There you go. out in L.A., the Panthers go out there and win another one. And you start to wonder if the Panthers are going to get this thing turned around and maybe make a run at a wild card spot. Because it looks like the Falcons are going to move out of range in the NFC South. But two straight for the Panthers coming off that bye week, and this was another good performance by the defense, and the offense is still sort of working through some things, but you know, they'll it looks like they'll get there eventually. Cam Newton took some more monster hits
to the head. The key for that offense is running the ball out of two back sets, and it doesn't have to be two running backs. You can have a tight end be the second back, but they need those movable pieces, those gap scheme guys, those pull blockers, those misdirection players. The more guys in their backfield on running plays, the better they are, and that's what they need to be getting back to. And that's what they've started to get back to a little more lately.
Yeah. And finally, in the lightning-ish round, we had Saints-Niners this game. I know you don't watch college football, Andy, but this was a Big 12 football game. This was very little tackling. A lot of guys catching short passes and running to the sideline and then running directly up the sideline for long touchdowns. It was that kind of game. But this included my absolute favorite play of the year. And I always wonder why more teams don't do this. So the Saints at the end of the first half had the ball on about the 25. They threw a pass down there. It was first down. There were 8 seconds left. So they snapped the ball. They were going to try and get one more offensive playoff and throw it to the end zone, obviously. And as soon as they snapped the ball, all the Niners defensive backs tackled the receivers in front of them. So the Saints just sort of like, Breeze sort of like ran around for a second and then eventually just like took a sack, but it ran the clock down to 2 seconds, so they had to come out and kick the field goal instead of actually
it's genius. A play. You need to do that, and I'll tell you what, this offseason an NFL head coach had asked me, he emailed me or texted me or something and said, what game scenarios do you think head coaches mess up the most? I'm curious. And I said, the one they mess up the most is not tackling receivers at the end of the half like that. And I was so proud of myself because the Eagles did that to the Cowboys at the end of the Sunday night game in Dallas last year, and it worked perfectly. That forced the Cowboys to kick a field goal and go to overtime instead of play for the win. And because it's a flaw in the system, because the clock still runs and the time's more valuable than the yardage there. So anyway, I bragged at that, and then I bragged to another coach, hey, here's what I told that guy. And the coach said, oh, every team in the league has that play. We call it handcuffs on our team. And the call is handcuffs. You put your hands behind your back. And if everyone's doing that, that means we're going to tackle everybody.
Well, it was pretty awesome. It made me happy as I watched that game.
Yep. Yeah. At some point, the league will it's going to go badly at some point. There will be a big playoff game. Someone's going to do it. Everyone's going to say, how can the game end on that kind of thing? And the NFL will change the rule. But until we get there, defenses can keep. And what we're talking about is everybody just tackles and holds the receiver because the clock runs. So you get 5-yard penalty. But who matter? It doesn't matter because the clock ran.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what happened. Kobe Fleener was incensed by the whole thing. It was pretty comical.
Number 10.
All right, topic 10, awards time. And we're going to do a special addition to the awards. We're going to give our midseason MVP picks here, but we're going to start with the traditional weekly awards, Offensive Player of the Week. Why don't you go first, Andy?
I'll go Kelechi Osemele. Chris Collinsworth gave him plenty of pub in this game, so I don't need to say a whole lot, but he's had a nice season in Oakland. Power running game, and those are running backs, kind of like Melvin Gordon, but for different reasons. They need good blocking in front of them as well. The offensive line defines that running game there in Oakland, not the backs. And Osemele was a monster in this one at times.
I'm going to give it to Matthew Stafford because he is just amazing. No running game, receivers are no good, and he just makes plays. And I don't know how they won this game, but they did. So Matthew Stafford gets my Offensive Player of the Week. Who do you got for Defensive Player of the Week, Andy?
You know, I'll go ha-ha Clinton Dix. He had the interceptions against Andrew Luck early in the game, and I know it wasn't a losing effort, but I'm excited to see what comes of Clinton Dix because he's had a quiet season, and the reason he's had a quiet season is they haven't blitzed a lot in Green Bay because they haven't felt comfortable doing that. The more diverse they are schematically, the more of an impact Clinton Dix will have. It's just the nature of his game. He's a dynamic player. I'm eager to see what he does in the second half of the year, and he's off to a very good start after this one.
Nice. I'm going to give it to Thomas Davis, who I was a little bit worried about earlier this year, but he looked like his old self today. Ended up with 10 tackles, had a strip sack, had an interception. Really nice day for him out in L.A. Special teams player of the week, best part of the show. Who you got, Andy?
Well, I actually typed it out this week for myself, and I see now that I typed Mike Prater, which is the name of the local sports editor in my town, the Idaho Statesman. I'm guessing, and I've been doing this my whole life, all the time. I'm guessing I met Matt Prater, but I'm going to give it to Mike Prater, editor of the Idaho Statesman sports section.
Mike Prater is also a Ben Folds song. I'm giving it to Jordan Todman, University of Connecticut grad, 99-yard touchdown off a, what was that, opening kickoff. He ran 99 yards.
He was, yeah.
Touchdown. Had another one for 61 yards. You watched that game, man. You should have given it to Jordan Todman. But this is, once again, your anti-UConn bias coming out.
The Seattle local commercials, or I'm in Seattle for this week, and the local commercials were running on the Todman kick return. So the game started, it went on, and I joined at the opening kickoff of the following touchdown, and then I looked down, I said, wait a minute, it's 14-something left in the score, and I saw the next kickoff, the one the Packers received.
I gotcha.
I'm still giving it to Prater.
Prater was my pick until Todman took over that game, until Todman single-handedly won that game out in Lambeau.
Those were important plays, you're right.
They were. They actually were. I know I'm being a sarcastic ass like I usually am, but yeah. Who do you got for Coach of the Week?
Oh boy, my coach of the week. Pause just a sec. I totally forgot we do coach of the week. we do have to edit this out. I'm trying to think of the games I saw and who won today. Pagano.
Yeah, you had the Giants, you had Pagano, yep. And you had Del Rio's staff.
Yep. Okay, 3-2-1. I'm going Steve Spagnuolo, Giants defensive coordinator. When that game got tight down the stretch, he dialed up the blitzes big time, and it worked.
I'm going to give it to John Harbaugh for doing what he always does to Ben Roethlisberger. And Dean Pease gets an assist on that. They can share it. They can share the RB's gift card. So we will add how many I have my five MVP candidates. I don't know how many you have, Andy. We never really settled on three or five.
I did top three.
Yeah, top three is fine.
Okay. Can I just say them? Can I just
I guess so.
We're at the end of the show. We're not going to discuss this for 30 minutes, right? We're just kind of lobbing it out here.
We'll discuss it off the air for 30 minutes.
Yeah, well, good. Very good. I have one Tom Brady. If you have an issue that he hasn't played enough games to qualify, I get that. So then my number two is Julio Jones. And after that, I would have Andrew Luck.
I went
with a
one
losing
Tom
record.
Brady.
I understand that. A losing record. But,
yeah, that's okay.
They would be a much more of a losing record without him, trust me.
I went one Tom Brady. I went two Matt Ryan. I gave it to Matt Ryan instead of Julio Jones. I thought about Julio, but, you know, Ryan's been so much better running that offense this year. Three Philip Rivers, four Matthew Stafford, and five Derek Carr to please all
what?
The angry Derek Carr fans
out
there.
How dare you? Oh, gosh. No, actually, and people aren't going to like me casually ending the show like this, I think Matt Ryan's the other one, the other QB who's really not playing, and it's changed. He's been much better the last few weeks, but he hasn't quite played as well as his record and stats indicate either. That's a great offense.
He's had to go to Denver and Seattle.
I get it. And I'm just – there's a chance – this is a positive thing. There's a chance they could be an absolute juggernaut in the second half of the year because I think Ryan will throw the ball with more precision, accuracy, and consistency in that regard – as the season moves on. He's already gotten better, but those first 5 or 6 weeks of the year, he was a little bit up and down, and they were still putting up big numbers.
Yeah, I say it was the competition. But we'll talk about it another time because, Andy, that is our show. Thanks, as always, to our researcher, Jeff Irwin, and to the folks at Digital Media who always make us sound so much better than we actually do. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You guys out there really are the best. Andy and I are desperate to hear from you, so contact us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GGrambling_SI. We're also both on Facebook, and we do love hearing from you. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Mack Weldon and Uber. Please support them the way they support our show. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week. Whoa.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.